from sunny St. Leonard's on the south coast of the UK. This is the Keto Woman Podcast, brought to you by me, Daisy Brackenhall. Hello, keto lovelies, and welcome to episode number 222. And we are carrying on with the Keto Curious series. And this week we are going to be talking about when and where. I'm going to race through a very quick roundup of what I've been doing. When I come to think about what I'm going to report back to you and tell you about every week, I realize what, well, I'm hesitant to say boring life. I don't find my life boring, but it is somewhat a lot repetitive. So consequently, I rarely have anything particularly exciting to tell you about. I have, of course, been carrying on with my swimming in the sea every morning. Although there is something I need to address there, I have to say that the time I've been getting up in the mornings has been slipping back a little bit. So I'm up to about an hour later than I was a few months ago about what time I get up and start my day. And that, of course, ends up having a roll-on effect on the rest of my day. So that's something that I have got to get a little bit better about, getting out of bed when I wake up rather than doing the old rollover and let's have another 5 minutes sleep that turns into an hour. But I have still been getting up and going swimming every morning, and mostly the sea has just been perfection, my idea of perfection anyway. Beautifully calm, and for the most part anyway, lovely clear blue skies, sunny days, crisp and cold, perfect winter swimming day. The only other quite exciting thing that happened this week was that I had my first ever deep tissue massage. I've had massages before and I do love a massage. So when a friend shared in a Facebook group that he'd been to this guy who gave him a fantastic massage, I thought, well, I'm going to treat myself and I'm going to book myself in. Well, I can't exactly say it was an enjoyable experience, not all the time anyway. A lot of the time it was quite painful. He found a lot of knots, and I mean, anyone who's had a deep tissue massage will know what I'm talking about. A lot of it was quite painful, and he said at the end that he was quite surprised by how I'd let him use the pressure he wanted to. And I laughed and said I didn't know I had a choice. But overall, it was a pleasant experience. And I'm going again this week. He said he wanted a couple of sessions just a week apart to work out the knots. And then we're probably going to be going into maybe once a month. So we'll see if the budget will extend to that. But I thought it would be quite a nice way to treat myself once a month. It felt along the lines of, I've been listening to James Clear, and he talks about picking external rewards for any kind of progress that you're making towards your identity goals and changing habits and behavior. He talks about choosing rewards that are in alignment with those goals. And so I figure these kind of massages very much are in alignment with my goals. So I'm hoping to keep them going and maybe work a few more of the nice, pleasure experience type massage into it, rather than it just being the painful working out of the knots deep tissue type massage. But anyway, overall, I'm hoping that it will help with my lipedema, but also some backache issues and things that I get. It was funny. He was saying, pointing out and pushing on various sore pressure points and saying, these ones around my neck and down between my shoulder blades, he says, that's working on the computer. And the ones that were in my, I guess you'd call buttocks, but or buttocks, as Forrest Gump would say, but right sort of up in the higher part. And he explained that the problems I get in my lower back are actually caused from these knots that are a little bit further down. And I have to say that those pressure points fair nearly made me leap off the massage table. And he said, those ones are from me sitting on my bum too much. So he impressed, and this is a topic that I've covered in Monday Mindset. He impressed the importance, if you have a job where you're sitting at your desk all day, working at the computer, that it's really important. Set a timer if you need to, but he impressed the importance of getting up, ideally every 30 minutes, to just spend about a minute doing some stretches to just sort of compensate a bit with those unhealthy knots of tension that you're building up. So I have been trying to do that. And that's about it. Everything else continues as normal. I've been tightening my keto game up a little bit. I felt it was necessary, and especially as I'm doing this Keto Curious series talking about it, it's reminding me of a few things that I need to address. And as, like so many people, over the holiday period, things went a little bit awry, not too badly, but enough to accumulate a few problems that I need to work out. So I've been tightening things up a little bit. It is a well-worn groove by now for me, but it does always surprise me actually about how quickly the effects start to take hold. And already I find myself with a little bit more energy, pushing myself to do a bit more swimming. And then especially when I've been swimming towards low tide and there's quite a bit of beach to cover to get back to where I get changed, I've even been jogging up the shingle. So, you know, sometimes I surprise myself with these things. So let's have a very quick recap of the first 2 weeks. I've no idea how long this series is going to go on for. I've already written notes for another 2 or 3 episodes. So who knows? I could ramble on for a couple of months by the time we're finished, especially with a few of the guest episodes I would like to include. But week one was who are you? And the importance of working with yourself, with you, and not trying to fit into someone else's idea of the perfect keto approach. So it's all about making keto work for you. Never forget that. Because the only sustainable plan is going to be one that works with and for you. Week two was what to eat. Now, I covered the what part of keto, what to eat. And mostly I referred you to places like Diet Doctor, where there are already great lists. But really the thing that I wanted you to think about was to figure out the foods that you like to eat, that you enjoy to eat, how they make you feel, which foods do you find satisfying, which foods leave you a bit hungry and craving more, which foods make you feel good and give you energy, which do the opposite. Maybe there are some noticeable physical effects, like they give you a bit of tummy ache or a headache or some bloat. All these things are important things to note. So finding the foods that you like and the foods that light you back. And that's why I want you to, at least for now, avoid as much as you can macros and calories and tracking. Because I want your focus to be to really think about the foods you're eating and your relationship to them. Now, I know that you can't really go anywhere, you can't hear anything about keto without also hearing about how many carbs you're supposed to be eating or supposed to not be eating, depends how you look at it. And surely it's all about getting into ketosis. And the keto police have probably had words with you by now, and on and on. So why do I say try and avoid that? Well, it is something that we'll get to. But my dream for you is to arrive naturally at least with your initial draft for your perfect keto. You arrive there by sifting through all the food choices that you've worked through some of these lists, like on Diet Doctor, and noting your relationship with them. And so drawing up your own lists of these foods you like and that like you back. Then you can do some tracking and see where you're at macros wise. You might find that you've naturally arrived at what the quote unquote perfect keto macro makeup is. But the problem is, and I think I've mentioned this before, that once you have that framework in place where you're thinking about the carb count or the calorie count, once you've got those glasses on, it's very difficult to not look at foods through those. So they're always going to have that tint to them, the choices that you make in the back of your mind. You're going to be thinking, oh, well, that's got so many carbs, that's got so many calories, and it's going to be impacting your choice. So ideally, you're just putting that to one side for a while and thinking purely about how these foods make you feel and what you like. Because again, if you want to make this sustainable, if you want to make this a long-term life change, you've got to like it. What's the point otherwise? So when you do get to a point where we start looking at tracking and macros and all that stuff, then you can tweak what you're eating with the knowledge that you already have under your belt of what is working well for you. With your own grading system, if you like, on the how it makes you feel scale. Because as I just said, the chances are quite good that you won't be far off a pretty good way to keto, at least for now, especially if you've kept it simple and stuck to real whole foods. Okay, so we talked a little bit about when to eat last week. Basically, mealtimes only, no snacking. But why does this matter if you're eating only keto foods? Maybe you've even seen already some meal plans that include 3 meals a day plus 1 or 2 snacks. But I would say that when you eat, or maybe when you don't eat, is every bit as important as what you eat. Assuming that you're eating a real whole food diet, you could argue that it's more important. What I mean by that is whether it's keto or not. Because to be honest, if you're eating a real whole food diet with minimal processed and refined foods, the carb level only becomes crucial if you need to reduce it below a certain level for health reasons. That could be things like diabetes, PCOS. It could be to help with mental health issues. It could be to calm cravings and addictive tendencies towards certain foods. And certainly that's something that applies to me. Actually getting more restrictive helps with the foods that I have control issues around. Many, many people benefit hugely from low carb and a ketogenic way of eating. But I do think that the key is real whole foods and how often you eat. And if everybody everywhere focused just on those things, the world would be a lot healthier place. I don't think there's anybody that wouldn't benefit from that. Eating only at meal times and eating real whole foods. So when to eat? Meal times only. How many is up to you, whether it's 2, whether it's 3. Ideally, your evening meal should be at least 3 or 4 hours before bedtime. Give yourself time to digest before you go to sleep. I mentioned last week about this natural rhythm and flow you have between hunger and satiety between meals. It's normal to get hungry before a meal. Yes, I know there's that tipping point where you can get too hungry and things go wrong because of that. But really building an appetite for your meal is a good thing. Apart from anything else, you usually enjoy your food more when you're hungry for it. Now, the fasting method talk a lot about TRE, time-restricted eating. And this is basically exactly what it sounds like, that you restrict the time period within which you eat. And that's both your meal times, but also the period of time you take to eat your meal. So what you don't want to end up doing is having this really prolonged meal time that really is just hours and hours of grazing. That's not a proper meal time. A meal time is when you sit down, you have a clear start and finish to your meal. So say you're going to have three meals a day. If you were to have your breakfast, your first meal of the day at 8 a.m., second meal, noon, third meal, 6 o'clock. Now, assuming you're done by 7 p.m., that means you're going to have an overnight fast of 14 hours, which is fantastic. I would say aim for at least 12 hours, which I think really is doable for most people. The meal that most people drop if they go to two meals a day is breakfast, but really it's whatever works for you. And don't feel any pressure. You will hear a lot of people saying that they find that their appetite wanes when they start eating keto. That might not be the case for you. So don't ever feel pressured to just be eating two meals a day if you like to eat three meals a day. But some people find straight away, like I just mentioned, that their appetite wanes quite a lot. They really don't fancy breakfast and they're perfectly happy having lunch and dinner. Or maybe they like having breakfast and they like having lunch, but don't feel hungry in the evening. Whatever. This, again, is coming back to journaling, being mindful, thinking about how you're feeling when it comes to not only what you're eating, but your hunger and your satiety signals for the rest of the day. It is important, I think, not to get too hungry, though, between meals, because what happens when you find yourself feeling too hungry, it's all too easy to just grab whatever's available. And depending where you are, depending what preparation and things you've put in place, that thing that's easy to grab might be a high carbohydrate thing, and it might be all the justification you need to give yourself to eat it. So, of course, it is better to snack on something keto if you really feel the need to, but have a think about your motivation for eating something when you're feeling a bit snacky. Dr. Robert Sivers talks about snacking as being an emotional event. And I agree. As long as you're fueling yourself properly at mealtimes, what is that snack but an emotional event of some kind? So when you find yourself in that place where you're going to the fridge or you're going to the cupboard or you're going wherever for a snack. So this is between meals. With that, oh, I'm feeling a bit peckish. I'm feeling hungry. I'm going to go and get a snack. Ask yourself, is it really food hunger? Do I need this food because I'm hungry, as in I need some fuel, or am I hungry for something else? What is the underlying emotion behind this quote unquote hunger? Maybe it's boredom, anger, frustration, feeling sad, depressed, anxious. So are you really basically looking for a distraction from this underlying emotion that you don't really want to feel in this moment? Is it a craving, a carb withdrawal? This is quite likely, especially in the early days. Sometimes it's actually thirst. You hear people saying, "I'll go and have a glass of water," and you may have scoffed at them because quite frankly, rarely is this the solution. But actually, sometimes it is. Sometimes it's quite easy to mistake hunger for thirst, or thirst for hunger. Not sure if I've got that round the right way, but you know what I mean. So sometimes going and fixing yourself a drink might be the answer, and it might satisfy that need for a snack. But if you're pretty sure it really is the I need food hunger, then there's a good test for this. This is something you've probably come across in your childhood. I certainly remember it coming home from school. But Mum, I'm hungry. Okay, well, if you're hungry, then you'll be satisfied with some bread and butter. Oh, but no, what I really want is a packet of crisps or a chocolate bar. Well, then you're not hungry, are you? So you can reproduce this, not with the bread and butter, but have something satiating but relatively boring ready to go in your fridge. So things like hard-boiled eggs, cooked meat, whatever it is, something not too varied. It's got to be sort of fairly boring, but be nutritious and filling, and right there, ready to go. Do you look at it with delight and set upon it ravenously? Or do you think to yourself, well, actually, what I really fancy is a piece of cheese or some nuts or maybe both or some, you know, a little snacking plate of different things that are tasty. Well, I think you know where I'm going with this. It's the old, well, I'd rather have a packet of crisps or a chocolate bar than the boring old bread and butter. Thanks, Mum. Now, quick note here, there's nothing wrong with those nuts and cheese and tasty little treats, but have them as part of your meal. And that can be a rule, at least when you're starting getting to know your keto self, is that no foods, as long as they're keto foods, are off limits as long as you have them at meal times. So the latter answer to that question, am I really hungry? Do I really need food? If your response is, well, no, actually, what I fancy is X, Y, Z, that is an emotional event of some kind. If you're truly hungry, then eat. And ideally, actually sit down and have a meal. At the very least, look at the possibility that you need to eat more at mealtimes going forward. If this is happening regularly, you know, if you're finding that every day at 3 o'clock you're feeling ravenously hungry, well, for one, that might be a little bit of a triggering habit going on. But if you are genuinely really, really hungry, then, you know, maybe look at bringing your dinner time further forward, eating a bit more at lunchtime. You get the idea. Eat enough at your meal times to sustain you until the next meal time. So when to stop eating? Now, I am all for relaxed meal times. Bit more on that later. But not an hours on end grazing event. Already mentioned that. But you basically need to eat to satiety. You'll probably have heard this. People say to you, well, just eat to satiety. A friend of mine has always said about keto, well, keto is really easy. You just eat the right foods till you're full and then you stop. Well, yes, okay, maybe, but maybe you're not coming from years of disordered eating and you now find yourself in a place where those satiety signals are all out of whack. If you're anything like me, you have spent years, decades in this limbo place where you never feel particularly satisfied, but neither do you feel particularly hungry because you're just eating on and off all the time and you're eating the quote unquote wrong kind of foods, basically high carb foods. I spent decades self-medicating my depression with carbs and sleep. Perfect bedfellows, because you spend your waking hours eating a lot of carbs, makes you sleepy, and so you sleep. And if you don't particularly like being awake because of how you're feeling emotionally, to spend your time alternating between distracting yourself by eating what you think of as at least comfort foods, they're not actually providing you with the comfort that you need. But with eating these kind of foods and then inducing sleep. And that's how I lived a lot of my life. I would throw days and days and weeks and years away like that. And if you do that for long enough, when somebody comes along with a phrase like, well, just eat to satiety, eat till you're full and then stop and don't eat for another however many hours and then eat again, it can make you feel a lot of things. It can make you feel a bit ashamed. It can make you feel a bit rageful and like punching them in the face. So I get it. I really do. But the thing about keto and the thing about fasting, actually, and we're not talking about fasting, you know, when you're getting into intermittent, longer term fasting, but just this idea of eating during a relatively short period of time and then having quite long periods of time between those meal times, those times when you eat, of not eating anything, of fasting. This is the best way to get those satiety signals working well again. So put the right ingredients together. Keep it simple. That's what we talked about in the What to Eat week. Decide on your meal times and stick to them as far as it is possible to do so. Again, is it better to snack on something keto if you really feel the need to snack? Of course, but try and work towards not snacking at all. Take your time when you're eating. And this is where the where comes in. Ideally, go and sit at a table and eat properly. But this all sounds ridiculously simple, but putting your food on a plate, not eating it out of the container, out of the fridge, standing up, put it on a plate, go and sit at a table and take some time with as few distractions as possible so you can really be mindful about what you're eating. Now, I'm not somebody, I'll be the first to admit, who does this. I always have some kind of distraction going on. Now, I've moved away from not watching the TV when I eat, for the most part anyway, but I'm quite often listening to something. So an audiobook or the radio, podcast, something like that. I just don't want to go that whole hog and eat in silence with myself. Obviously, it's a lot easier when you're eating with somebody else. But then, you know, my argument is, well, that's a distraction to a certain extent. But my point is to not have too much of a distraction. And the where is important, really. To be sitting comfortably in a chair at a table is a good position to be in to eat and digest. Not eating on your lap on the sofa in front of the TV, not eating at your desk where all your work is, and hopefully not eating while you're working, not eating on the go, grabbing your breakfast and eating it while you're walking. Digestion takes a lot of energy, so don't put too much stress on your body by trying to do something else at the same time. Sit down. Take your time to eat and eat slowly. Chew your food. This is something that was drummed into me after weight loss surgery. It became very important because I had such a tiny, tiny stomach. But it's important for everybody. It's the first part of the digestive process. And it's important. It's important that you chew your food down into small enough pieces so that you're not overworking your stomach. If you don't chew your food well, your stomach's got to work, you know, all the gastric juices and the acids, they've all got to work so much harder to digest it enough that it can start passing down through your intestinal tract. So take your time, chew your food. Now, something that comes to mind for me here is the French paradox. You've probably heard of this. You've probably heard about it in relation to it's usually when wine comes into the picture. Why is it that there seems to be a lower incidence of heart disease in France, despite them in general eating similar quantities of saturated fat, cholesterol levels, blood pressure, smoking, you know, no lower than anywhere else? Why is this? Like I say, all sorts of theories quite often comes down to wine. And as I'm sure you'll know, I spent the best part of 2 decades living in France, so got to observe French culture and in particular eating. Eating is really important to the French. And what's interesting about the habits that they have around food. Now, I have to say this did change over the time that I was living there. When I first moved to France, almost nothing was open at lunchtime. For a couple of hours in the middle of the day, nothing was open, not even supermarkets. That started to change. And also noticeably, the things that were available in the supermarket. So I saw an increase in things like ready meals, but still not to the point of like in the UK as a comparison. In the supermarkets, you will see aisles upon aisle of ready meals and processed and refined products. And there are far fewer of these available in France. In the most part, people do cook from scratch. A typical day in France will probably be something fairly light for breakfast, maybe even skip breakfast. But they do not tend to eat between meals. They do have breakfast, lunch, dinner. Sometimes dinner does become a bit more of a drawn out process with apéro, but it's still within a reasonable framework that they're eating that evening meal. And in general, lunch is usually the biggest meal of the day, and they take their time. And I think these are the key components of what's important in the French paradox, that they mostly eat real whole foods. They stick to meal times and they take their time eating their meals. And yes, wine is often involved, but I have to say, not that much. It was always the Brits at the workers' lunch places who were consuming a lot more wine. The French in general, pretty moderate with their alcohol consumption. But it's very, very typical in France. And there are lots of places that have menu d'ouvrier, workers' lunches. And workers, especially artisans, like I say, it is starting to change and the lunch hours are shrinking. But in general, people will have a 2-hour lunch break and they go and they have their lunch somewhere and they take their time. They take at least an hour and a half to have what is often a 3, 4, even 5 course meal. Not as huge as it sounds. The portions aren't massive, but a typical worker's lunch will be soup, a small starter, a main course, maybe cheese and dessert, or cheese or dessert, probably have a glass or two of wine, a coffee at the end. And then their evening meal usually tends to be something a little bit lighter, but meal times are usually a relaxed, quite often a sociable event. Workers will go to a place together and they will sit and they will take their time enjoying their food, chatting to each other. And I think this is the key to the French paradox. So how much should you be eating and when should you stop? Again, journal and be mindful about this and see how you get on. you know, you might note that, oh gosh, the 3 scrambled eggs with my bacon and sausages was a bit much. Let's try it with 2 and see how I'm getting on. Or maybe vice versa. It's not filling me up enough. Let's throw in an extra egg. You get the idea. Just be mindful about how satisfied, how filling you're finding food and meals. Now, there is this Japanese term that I really like called harahachibu. I'm sorry if I've totally messed up the pronunciation of that. But it translates as eat until you are 80% full. And you should kind of feel like you could get up and do some light chores after eating. Not that I'm suggesting you do so. But you shouldn't feel so stuffed you can't move. So it's figuring out the amount of food that leaves you satisfied. Maybe another word to describe it could be fueled or nourished, but not so stuffed you kind of feel like you have to lie down for a while. Now, I wouldn't worry about this too much yet. It's just something to keep in the back of your mind. It's just something that I've been thinking about lately and I've been working on. It really does depend, as I said before, where you're coming from as far as diet and eating habits go. And it's something that could take a long time to figure out. But if you are constantly just feeling that you're overstuffed with your meals, dial them back a bit. But like I say, it's going to be difficult to get that balance right because you might have been going from, well, Daisy, you said about I shouldn't be snacking and I'm feeling like I need to snack and you said eat more at meal times. Yes, you see, it's, you know, it takes some work. It's going to take some time to find the balance. And also, it's going to change your appetite and feelings of satiety when you get used to eating keto are going to change as well. So don't worry too much about it. But yeah, try not to find yourself in a place where you're too hungry, especially if that place has got loads of carby foods on offer and not many keto foods to choose from. And if you're somebody who panics when you don't have food available, you know, make sure you do have something keto to hand. Don't find yourself ravenously hungry in those problematic environments. So especially at home, always having things like eggs, bacon, butter to hand and in stock ensures that you can have a meal ready in minutes. How long does it take to scramble some eggs in butter? A few minutes. And there you have a tasty, nutritious, filling meal. So that's pretty well it for this episode. As usual, I've rambled all over the place, talking about my time in France and all sorts of things. I hope you've found it helpful. A quick roundup. When to eat, meal times only. Try and stop 3 to 4 hours before bedtime. Eat in a timely but relaxed fashion and chew your food well. And aim for at least 12 to 14 hour overnight fast. Wear, ideally, not on the run, not on the move, not grabbing something and eating it as you walk to work. Ideally, sat down at a table, not your desk, and limit those distractions. Keep up that journal, whatever form it takes. You know, maybe you're a dinosaur like me, pencil and paper. Maybe it's an app, a notes app on your phone, video, voice notes, whatever it is. Just keep noting how you feel around food and the changes that are taking place. Maybe things that you need to work on, things that have helped and so on. What are you learning about yourself? Do you maybe need to reassess the who from week 1? Maybe you thought being held accountable would work really well, but actually it's making you want to hide what you eat. Maybe you're feeling like you want to push back against it, feeling guilty, comfort eating. Then change it. Change your setup. Change your approach to what feels more appropriate now. Nothing ever needs to be set in stone. And remember, again, the most important thing, keto, low carb, however you end up eating, it might not be keto. Your way of eating needs to work for you because this is forever. This is for the long term. This is going to be who you are now. So it's got to be something that tastes good. So my top tip this week, you've heard it already, but it's so appropriate, is from Robert Sivers. Snacking is an emotional event. And if you are still with me, thank you very much. You've made it to very nearly the end of another week of my rambling Keto Curious series. I do appreciate it. I do hope that some of these rambles that I'm sharing with you are helpful to you or maybe somebody you know you can share them with. And I'm going to leave you with one of my favorite people for the end quotes, and that is James Clear. This is a rather long end quote, but a good one and very appropriate. Are you willing to be uncomfortable for 5 minutes? Exercising is easier once you've started the workout. Conversation is easier once you're already talking. Writing is easier once you're in the middle of it. But many rewards in life will elude you if you're not willing to be a little uncomfortable at first. So, of course, he didn't mention keto there. But keto, low carb, it might be difficult to start with. But to quote my very good friend, Terry Lance, who I'm going to be seeing in a minute to record a Monday Mindset episode with, you can do hard things. So until next week, I do hope you have a very fabulous weekend, a very fabulous week. And I will see you back here, same time, same place, next week. Please take very, very good care, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.